Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Shelley Lindsay from Ashland, and I'd like to introduce my family, please. This is my husband, Philip, my son, Simon, my daughter, Adeline, my son, Elliot, my son, Garrett, my son, Gideon, my daughter, Ivy, and my son, Ezekiel. In case you hadn't noticed, we're sort of a unique family. Philip and I were high school sweethearts and married at the age of 18. And on the day we married, we promised each other that we would never live a boring life, and we have not. We decided to get married young, have our children young, and then do something exciting with our lives. We very speedily had three wonderful sons, Matthew, Benjamin, and Noah, who are now all successful young men in their late 20s and 30s. And we also traveled to South Korea and adopted two beautiful, lovely young ladies who we adopted in infancy, our precious Kiki and Tess, who are now in their young 20s. We live in Ashland in a large home in the historical district. It's a very safe, beautiful place to live. Philip is a general contractor, and I am a child advocate. When we learned that over 400,000 children were waiting for adoption in the United States, most of color and most with special needs, we believed that our fate had been sealed and that we had our life set out for us. We chose to open our family and our home to these children. And that is the way that these children all became Wednesdays that are with us today.
Mrs. Lindsay, if I can just break in for a second. We have your written testimony.
Yes, ma'am.
And there won't be time to read the whole thing.
No, so I won't be reading the whole thing.
Great. Thanks.
Our children came to us with a myriad of medical, physical, developmental, and emotional challenges and disabilities. And over the first few years that they were placed with us, that's what we attempted to do, is to learn to advocate for them and to access for them the resources that they needed to succeed in Ashland. They were very fortunate to be able to attend one of the top-ranked elementary schools in the whole state of Oregon, Briscoe Elementary School. In the spring of 1998, everything kind of collapsed around us. One afternoon, our son Isaac, who was 12 at the time, who is not with us today, came to us and very quietly told us that he had something bad he needed to tell us. Our hearts broke as he shared with us that he had been the victim of a sexual crime. And over the course of the next few hours, every one of the children that you see today came to us and shared that they had been raped and sodomized and horribly sexually humiliated and abused. Everything that we held sacred pretty much fell apart that day. The next year was pretty much just a blur for our family. It was filled with meetings with the district attorney, the police, the Children's Advocacy Center, as we struggled to keep our head above water and to keep going and loving our children and caring for them and supporting their older siblings while we all just reeled from this pain. When the children disclosed that they had been raped and sodomized, they identified their rapist as our next-door neighbor, a 14-year-old young man named Ryan Douglas Smith. It took almost a year to get to trial, but in February 1999, we went to trial with Judge Mark Shively in Jackson County. Every single day for 8 days, we walked these children up those marble steps. And we led them to the witness stand, and they testified for hours concerning their sexual abuse. They mentioned and discussed things that young children should never have to discuss, and our hearts broke as we listened to them. We had so much support from the district attorney's office, from the victim's advocate's office, from the Children's Advocacy Center. However, it was just barely enough to keep us putting one foot in front of the other. After 8 grueling days of being hammered by 3 attorneys and our children respectfully answering, telling the truth, telling their stories, explaining in graphic detail how they had been abused, Judge Shively announced that he was ready to read his verdict. The verdict was, let me make sure I read this correctly. Ryan Smith was guilty of 5 counts of sexual abuse 1, 4 counts of sodomy 1, and 2 counts of rape 1. We gently led these children out of that courtroom that day, and we made them a solemn promise that they would never, ever have to speak about these horrible experiences in public, and we would do everything we could to heal them and protect them. 1 month later, my husband and I returned to court for Mr. Smith's sentencing. Our district attorney, Karen Loomis, argued vehemently that Mr. Smith should be placed in the Oregon Youth Authority to prevent any other children from being harmed. However, Judge Shively decided to give Mr. Smith one more chance and sentenced him to 8 days served in juvenile detention, probation, and community-based treatment. We felt that day that we had been kicked in the stomach because we felt, how could our children suffer so greatly and this man still be allowed back out on the streets? Our children did not feel safe at that point. Luckily, we didn't have to wait too long. Mr. Smith did not work with his treatment team, and he was in full denial of his crimes. He also failed his polygraphs. And 3 weeks later, Judge Shively ordered him remanded to the Oregon Youth Authority, where he remains today. It didn't surprise us that the Smith family mounted an appeal. The process took almost 3 years, and we were greatly relieved to receive a 20-page decision from Judges Edmonds, Armstrong, and Kistler, unanimously affirming the convictions and even commending the attorneys on a fine job on a difficult case. We learned after the fact that the Oregon Supreme Court had affirmed without opinion. In late 2004, we learned that Mr. Smith was mounting a post-conviction relief attempt. Our Assistant Attorney General, Susan Gerber, called us to reassure us that we really had nothing to worry about. Both the appeals court and the Supreme Court had upheld the convictions. No errors in the trial had been found. She assured us we really needed to not be concerned. We breathed a sigh of relief because we had far better things to do. We were very naive. Things turned ugly very, very quickly. We learned that the Attorney General's office represents the veracity of the original case, not our children, not the victims. This was, after all, a civil action brought by Mr. Smith against his attorneys, alleging that they had failed to represent him adequately during trial. We were shocked beyond all reason when a process server arrived on our front porch and served our children with subpoenas. They were being ordered to testify for Ryan Smith, their rapist. The next day, we had another shock. We were served with a subpoena requiring that we turn over 15 years of all of our personal family records pertaining to our children's medical, emotional, educational, financial, and legal histories. We were shocked. Where had our victims' rights gone? The Attorney General's office recommended that we quickly hire a private attorney to have the subpoenas quashed. It was recommended also that we contact an organization called Crime Victims United, and that's how we met Steve Dole. He has stood by our family steadfastly through this entire 3-year experience. Mr. Dole also seemed very surprised by how our family was attacked through this lack of protection in the law. Our children had done absolutely everything asked of them by the police, the district attorney, and the judge. They'd made their disclosures. They had endured physical examinations. They'd been videotaped. They had undergone countless therapy sessions. They had testified truthfully. And then they tried to put their lives back together and be children. 7 years of healing had taken place. Now Mr. Smith's new attorneys were requiring them to be deposed and to turn over all their personal records of the last 15 years up to the present day. This seemed like another nightmare. First and foremost, I'm a mother, and a mother always protects her children. But I was powerless. Ms. Gerber and our personal attorney told us that in spite of all their motions and work to protect the children from deposition by hostile attorneys, it seemed unpreventable, given the way the Oregon law presently read. The new judge had no cause to stop the depositions. I've never had a traffic ticket, and I have always found myself to be, or attempted to be, a good example for my children. But that summer of 2005, I made a startling decision. I decided to stand in contempt of court, to defy the court and to deny the subpoena's orders. I decided I would best serve my children by agreeing to be jailed to protect them. There was no way that I was going to allow Mr. Smith or his attorneys rip open the wounds that had just barely healed. We had had 7 years to work with them on their healing, and now they were at the cusp of adulthood, and we didn't have the luxury of seven more. Never in my whole life could I have ever imagined being in contempt of any court. Throughout 2005 and 2006, our family's focus once again became Ryan Smith. Every day was filled with court appearances, hearings, subpoenas, subpoena after subpoena. We had stacks this high. Once again, time was stolen from our family. We couldn't attend to school dances, soccer matches, or grandbabies being born. We couldn't have joy at weddings. We couldn't have joy at graduations because we had to appear in court. We had to discuss the sexual abuse, the rape, and the sodomies again and again and again. The children developed behavior problems, school problems, sleep problems, and health problems. And one of our children attempted suicide. How many times during those 2 years did one of these children utter to me, "This is not fair"? How many times did one of us cry out of just sheer frustration? We called in all the supports. Susan Gerber explained every step of the way to us. We talked with our district attorney at length. She worked with our children. Everyone involved seemed truly shocked and dismayed that we had no protection from this onslaught. This was the year of Katrina, and my husband decided to close his business and take the children to help the people who were suffering in the South. They left with a convoy of trucks, trailers, a motorhome, tractors, a crane, $40,000 worth of donated emergency supplies from Ashland, and six Lindsay children. Our group landed in Biloxi. Yes, ma'am.
Can you kind of get to the post-conviction part of this? Thank you.
While the children were in Biloxi, the judge ordered them returned to the state immediately, or we would be sanctioned further. When we appeared in court before that judge, we were warned that I would not be jailed for contempt of court. Rather, we would be fined or sanctioned thousands of dollars every day, which we did not provide our children for deposition. We were backed into a corner, and we had no choice. Philip took our two oldest daughters for their deposition. The deposition was held at Mr. Smith's attorney's office. We were assured that Mr. Smith would not be present. And yet when our daughter Tess walked into the room, she confronted her sibling's rapist, and he smirked at her. The attorneys actually discussed placing a potted plant in front of Mr. Smith so that our daughter did not have to watch him while she was deposed. It was that day that we made the determination that no other Lindsay child would confront Mr. Smith at a deposition. We negotiated daily with the attorneys, and we finally worked out an agreement that our children would be deposed at the Jackson County Children's Advocacy Center, with me present and with a therapist present to support the children. Each of these children had to be deposed for 1 to 3 hours each. I was deposed for 7 hours. There was one point in the deposition where Mr. Smith's attorney looked at one of my daughters and said, "This is a little difficult for you, isn't it, honey?" It took our breath away just how much cruelty there was. No one in that room seemed to grasp the trauma that these children had gone through. We felt that we had lost the battle, but we had come through strong again. The next month, we were notified that our doctors, our schools, and the Children's Services Department was served with subpoenas asking for all of our records for 15 years. Our attorneys were able to get a writ of mandamus from the Supreme Court, barring this information going to the attorneys. However, before that writ was served, 3,000 pieces of documents ended up in Mr. Smith's attorney's offices, which they have to this day. In November 2006, 2 days before Thanksgiving, 10 days after the birth of a new grandson, Ryan Smith's post-conviction trial was held before Judge Pat Wilkie of Josephine County. Our entire family attended as most of us were subpoenaed. The children bravely entered the courtroom and faced the man who had raped them when they were little children. The children were, at the time of their rapes, Garrett was 7, Elliot was 8, Simon was 9, Adeline, Ivy, Zeke, and Garrett were 10, and Isaac was 12. Once again, it was the children's strength that brought us through. Ms. Gerber impressed us greatly with her knowledge of our case and the law. We resolved that day to make certain that no other victim should ever have to endure what our family had gone through for the past 3 years. 2 months after the trial, this year, we learned that Judge Wilkie had found no cause to set aside the convictions. The post-conviction relief was denied. Ryan Smith would stay in the Oregon Youth Authority until he was 25 years old. He had exhausted all avenues. He was guilty of raping our children. This is our family's story. We ask that this committee consider it carefully. Victims deserve protection. Many of those protections are already in existence in this state and are used daily. Victims do not want to face the person who harmed them. Victims require time to heal. Victims do not want to be forced over and over and over again to testify about their pain and trauma. Victims and their families want to move on with their lives. We ask that you assure them this protection. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you all you kids for coming up here and bearing witness to this testimony.
Well, my son Simon has a short statement, Madam Chair.
Welcome, Simon. Can you give your name for the record?
Yes. My name is Simon Lindsay, and I go to Ashland High School. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Simon Lindsay, and I am a sophomore at Ashland High School. I am 17 years old, and I was adopted when I was 2. I play varsity soccer, and I'm a pretty good student. I have 12 brothers and sisters, 8 dogs, and 2 cats. When I was 9 years old and in the second grade, I was raped by our next-door neighbor, a 14-year-old boy named Ryan Smith. He raped me on 2 different days in the Briscoe bathroom. I was a really little kid, and he seemed huge. He told me he was my friend and that it wouldn't hurt. He was at our school visiting his mom, our librarian. He told me that if I told anyone, he would kill me. I can't tell you how bad the rapes hurt. I'll never forget that day until I die. Our family had to go to court and testify to what Ryan did. It was terrible to have to get up and talk about such personal stuff when you're a little kid. It was horrible to see all my brothers and sisters and parents hurting too. I was very glad when Ryan was found guilty and sent to OIA. Three of his convictions were because of me. I thought I'd never have to see him again. I'm here today to ask you to make laws to keep victims from having to testify over and over again. When I found out that I had to be deposed and tell my story again, I started to have nightmares that wouldn't go away. I also had to think sometimes that Ryan was following me. I couldn't forget that he told me he'd kill me or hurt my sisters if I told. It's not easy being a teenager and trying to do well in sports and in school and have friends, also worrying about some crazy person who hurt you a long time ago. So please, change the law so no one else has to do what I had to do. Thank you very much.
And thank you for coming, Simon. We really appreciate it. Are there questions? Please? Thank you. Mr. Lindsay, did you want to add anything?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's very powerful testimony.